Welcome to Cardboard Box Games. I'm Adam.
And I'm Adam.
Today we're going to be talking about what happened at our tournament. And also...
Yeah, also we got quite a few other topics. We're going to talk about what our favorite houses are.
Yep.
And not just our favorite houses in general, but our favorite house combinations.
Mm-hmm.
We got a couple tips and tricks. And if we get time, we may even cover some of the new cards. And I guess last but not least... This is episode 12 already.
It is, yeah.
That's crazy. Let's get started. I think we kick off this week's episode by talking about how our tournament went. And this is going to be quite painful for me. So I'm going to let you start. How did you do in your... This was a sealed tournament, by the way.
Yeah, sealed
that
tournament.
That we did.
So, I forgot completely what I got from my decks. I forgot what houses I got, but I got 2 wins and 1 loss. I also got picked for the surprise winner, and I got this awesome Keyforge mat. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's an awesome Wild Wormhole artwork mat that they gave away.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. I had Bromnar. Yeah, I don't remember right. Houses at all.
I played against you too, and I don't remember what it was. But yeah, you did the best out of all of us in the tournament.
I really liked my deck. It was very controlling. I felt like I had an answer for every single situation. I had the Iron Obelisk, I believe it's called. It's where whenever a friendly Bromnar creature is damaged, the opponent's keys cost +1. More.
Oh yeah, that card. Oh my god.
I loved it since I had 9 Bromnar creatures and I was going to lose my first and second match, but then I got that card and I just ran all my Bromnar creatures into their weaker creatures.
And got them all damaged.
Yeah, and I stopped them.
That's awesome.
It was awesome. It was pretty cool.
My first match was super close. And what ended up making it close was I had that card that every time an enemy creature is destroyed on your turn...
Gain an amber.
You capture an amber.
You capture an amber.
I really have bad memory on this today, but I think it was,
I know it's Sanctum, for sure.
Was it a Sanctum card? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know why I had in my head it was something else, but either way, I thought it was a Bromnar card. I might have to look that up to make sure. I just wish I had my deck with me that I played. But anyway, the card gave me the ability to really keep my opponents from foraging for a long time in that first game. So he would get to the point where he can forage, I would stop him. But then he would also stop me too, because he had a lot of capture and he had a lot of... I had this huge creature board. This is 2 keys to 2 keys. Huge creature board. I probably had 6, 7, 8 amber captured of his.
Yeah.
He, on the other side... had basically no creatures, and he had the Lash of Broken Dreams, that thing that makes your keys cost 1 or 3 extra.
Yeah.
And he top decked, he had already been through his deck one time, I'd been through my deck, he top decked his 1 board wipe he had.
Oh, wow.
Wiped my entire board on his turn, took his 3 chains, but he had gained so much amber from all the amber I captured, I couldn't win that game. I think I would have won that game if it wasn't for that top deck, but...
Yeah, for me, I had... My first game, I had, 18 creatures on the board. My opponent had no, controlling cards at all, so I just kept reaping with all...
You destroyed them.
Yeah. And that's what happened with my second time. But then my third time, no, that's lucky. Gave it a diss.
So I was 0-1 at that point.
0-1.
My second match, I felt confident because the person I played against was a really good player, and I felt like I could go in and... my deck, I felt like it was doing good. It was doing okay. And I just got destroyed. This person's deck made a ton of amber. Like a ridiculous amount of amber. And my deck did not make amber. So raw amber count on my deck was 6. It was super low. So I got destroyed. I'm 0-2. And then the third match, I ended up playing you.
Yeah.
And I started out in the lead again. But you ended up, closing it out. So I finished 0-3. I did look up my decks. One of my decks was a 64. One of them was in the 70s. I do think I made some play mistakes. But I think overall, my decks were just both incredibly weak for, like, Amber generation. Mm-hmm. And I think it was just an uphill battle the entire time. But it was a fun tournament. I had a good time. The other guy that came with us, he ended up going 1-2. He lost two incredibly close games as well. Like, a turn difference, he would have been 3-0. Like, that's how close. Turn really? Difference in each of those games.
That's pretty
just
cool.
Incredibly close. So the next tournament we're going to be going to is this weekend.
Yes, it's an Archon tournament.
And I've been really, really, really trying to narrow down my deck, and I have it picked now, so I know what deck I'm going to play. And I actually wanted to 3D print, like, a nice container and everything for the tournament, but the power went out about 30 hours into it. And
we actually made one. It's pretty cool, though.
Yeah, so this isn't done, though. This is what quit working.
And this is...
this is my first failure.
This was their first failure.
Yeah, this is my first failure.
Yeah.
Filament broke. So and then the idea was that a sleeve deck could fit in here, in this middle, this section over to the left. And I know for those of you listening on the audio version, it's hard to see, but it's one of these is a light baby blue. That's the one that failed sooner. The other one is like a chocolatey coffee color. And this one actually made it pretty far, pretty close to what I wanted. My deck's actually, it's good. It would have like a finger hole in there, so I modeled this out like to be really nicely, to fit nicely. Since this failed, I'm actually going to attempt modeling it out a slightly different, because I feel like I've got a lot of wasted plastic in this print. But I'm not going to have it ready for the tournament, and I'm a little bummed by that, because I don't have good storage options for my decks, and I apparently also everyone in the house hates it when my 3D printer runs, so I'm...
You run it at night, though.
I have to. It has to run nonstop.
And then one time it failed, and all we heard was a ticking noise at night.
That was this one. Well, there goes Amber everywhere. So that was kind of our tournament results.
Like, yeah.
If you think about going over to our next topic that we've got... I'm picking up Amber off the floor right now, but I spilled all over.
So the next topic is how... Or should we? Yeah, we'll just do houses next. Our favorite houses, okay?
House combinations.
House combinations. So one of my favorite house combinations is anything with Sanctum and Bromnar together, and maybe like a controlling house like Shadow or this, because I love Cleansing Wave and Fire Spitter together. It's an awesome combination. If you don't know what that is, Cleansing Wave is heal one damage off every creature, and for each creature healed, gain one amber. And for Fire Spitter, before attack, deal one damage to every enemy creature. And that's, I just love that ability. I just send Fire Spitter and attack with the rest of my creatures that I want to attack with. And then use Cleansing Wave next turn and heal everyone.
Yeah, could you imagine a Maverick card that was like Cleansing Wave so you could play it on the same turn as Brobnar?
That would be awesome.
It'd be amazing. Yeah, I do like that fire. And I actually was playing somebody at work yesterday during lunch. And I did that same thing. So it was like, and I gained like 8 amber in that turn.
8 amber, wow.
When I first looked at Cleansing Wave, I felt like it was a pretty bad card. But it's actually surprisingly fun and awesome.
Depending on what cards you have in your deck.
It can be a dead draw.
Yeah.
But I mean, more times than not, it gets me 2-3 amber.
Yeah.
More times than not, I've actually gotten 5, 6, 7 amber from it. Like, it's crazy powerful. Early game, it's horrible. And then you just discard it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a card that you'd want to hold on to. Or maybe I missed it. Maybe I'm even evaluating that wrong. I don't know.
I never held on to it. I just got it at the right moment all the time.
Yeah, it actually, if I open that in my opening hand, I mean, I'm trying to think, like, would I hold on to that? Because, I mean, you think about the power of gaining 6 or 7 amber. It's pretty strong.
It is, yes.
But you need the creatures to do it. So it would depend on how the board state is shaping up.
And how many creatures you have.
Typically today, I have my hold on to that card. But, and Fire Spitter the same way. Like, I just get that guy on the board as soon as possible, and then...
Hmm.
Yeah, so, I think, to me, my favorite house combination is Logos and Shadows. And I know that's sort of a weak answer. because I think Shadows is by far the best house, and I think Logos pairs with it so well that it just sets you, and I'll give you kind of like the example. I played against a deck at work one time, and I'm trying to remember when it was, but anyway, the guy was playing Shadow, Logos, and Untamed. Like, my, like, probably favorite house combination of all, like, for the three.
Yeah.
And he had so many draw effects that he literally, like, at one point had, like, 15 cards in his hand.
15 cards, wow. Like,
he had three Quixote guys that when they fight and they got skirmish, you draw a card. He had two Doc Booktons out on the board that when you reap, you gain two cards. You gain a card for each one. He had library access. He had Wild Wormhole. He had Sloppy Lab Work. He had like all of these things that he was pairing together. And it was just incredibly powerful. And then you tie that on top of like a shadow with like Bait and Switch and Lights Out and cards that will, like Urchin and things that just steal and pick away at your Amber. It was just insanely strong to play against that. To the point where I actually felt like the Untamed, which had two Hunting Witches in it, wasn't quite as good as the other two houses. But it was like he was able to double Full Moon and play Hunting a couple Witch. Like Untamed. And yeah, and he gained like a ton of Amber from his Untamed creatures. But you think about drawing all those cards and being able to do that. Like, that was just insane. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, man, I am going to be dead this game. Like, there's no way. But I made it super close. I actually, you know, I got it down to where it was two keys to two keys. And at the end, I was able to gain, like, 10 Amber on my last turn. But was not able to stop him from forging. Because he had gained one too many Amber for me to be able to stop him. And I was super bummed about that. Like, when he stopped at 7, I'm like, all right, I can stop this. I stopped it. And he gained one more, and I'm like, no. So, yeah, I really, really, really love Logos and Shadows together. And actually, the deck that I'm going to be playing in our next tournament has Logos and Shadows in it. I don't think it's as strong as the deck that was played against me, as far as, like, the cards that are in there.
Are you playing the Mother of Friendship? That's the only deck I...
I'm playing Steel Kettle of the Center. And then I think it's got a SAS rating of 84.
I think so. Yeah, around that.
And I've been keeping track of my record on the Crucible with that, and I'm like 12-2 on that.
Wow,
on
Crucible. That's pretty good.
And I've played like there's one guy that I'm where I work that's actually hoping to come to the tournament, and him and I have been practicing. And we've had some insanely close, tight games because I think both of our decks are actually really, really equally powered. Mm-hmm. And it comes down to just making the right play decisions. So that's what I'm having the most fun with right now. But I also wanted to talk about like some of the other houses. So Mars, for example. If you open a deck with Mars, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking it's horrible right away.
Yeah, and I do too.
Yeah.
But I think... I saw the other day that the first deck, let me see if I remember, I'm fairly certain that I saw the first deck to make power level 3 has Mars in it.
Really?
Yeah, and if not, it was a power level 2 deck. And the Mars that they had in there just seemed really strong. So I feel like Mars doesn't have independently strong things. Mm-hmm. I think Mars has strong combinations of things. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, yeah.
And I don't think I've gotten a deck yet where I felt like my Mars is, like, so awesome. Like, you get a deck with a ton of John Smiths that allow you to start, like, reaping and doing things with other creatures. Like, but I have played against Mars decks on the Crucible that I felt like were extremely good. I will say my deck has a lot of poison and... Not a lot, but enough poison, and it's got the it's got that artifact in Logos that test taps to blow up like a damaged creature.
Yeah,
and man, do big creatures hate that? Like, it's literally like dink, blow up.
And I purposely put like the good creatures on the flanks because I want to dodge that one discard.
Don't destroy it, Hand of Dis.
Hand of Dis, yes. Yeah. And now I need to realize that there's actually cards that destroy the flying creatures also.
Oh, I know what guy you're talking about. My creature that taps or reaps to blow up a... destroy a flying creature.
Exactly. It's a shadow creature. Yeah. It's elusive and it's rare, I believe.
It is, yeah. And then the other card that I really love in the deck I'm playing is Necklifter. This is by far one of my favorite cards. And I honestly will hold on to that card as long as I have to now. Which has bit me twice. But out of the 14 games that I played on Crucible, 12 times, it was amazing. 2 times, like, they never played an artifact. And I'm like, how does the deck not have an artifact?
So that card, if you don't know what it is, when you play it, you get to steal an opponent's artifact. And if it's not of any of your houses, it becomes Shadow.
Yeah. And they don't get it back.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I just keep it. So, and I've actually cycled through that and had it twice in a game.
Twice, wow.
It was, I think, honestly, the long games I win, the games that are back and forth, that card is one of the reasons, because there's that Untamed card that a lot of people play where it's like you tap and you steal one amber if they have more than 6 or more. That one's been amazing for me to pull into my deck. The other one is the... there's a shadow card that makes you discard a random card when you tap a section.
Yeah.
I hated having that card used against me. So it was like the opponent had Seeking Needle, which is the deal 1 damage, or that guy. And I'm like, oh, I'm just going to take the one. That way no one has to... I'm not going to keep losing cards all turn. I probably made my opponent lose 7 cards that game. And a couple of them were like huge cards.
Huge cards.
Like cards that like bait and switch. Like I hit a bait and switch in their hand.
Wow.
Like it... I got super lucky. That doesn't normally happen. But it's pretty awesome. And I feel like that card is just something that isn't super impactful, but because of the cards I hit, it became insanely impactful. Because it went from me losing the game to that bait and switch to winning the game, and winning the game like in a significant margin, which was amazing. Because then I knew that was out of their hand, and I knew they only had one. do you have any other favorite house combinations?
Well, we already talked about Shadowness and Untamed.
Yep.
I only really like it because my Ponderous Duelist deck was that, and that was like the first deck I really played that I really enjoyed.
It did well.
It did well, yes, and it's very controlling, and I like the playabilities the Untamed creatures have, and like actions in Untamed, so where you have Full Moon and play a bunch of creatures, or you can play Hunting Witch, play a bunch of creatures, gain a bunch of amber. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's a linear way to play, but it's so much fun.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you have that Hunting Witch out, and if you position it in a way that there are other creatures that are just bigger threats, or you protect it with like a Shadow Self, or you protect it with a Taunt creature, it turns out that Hunting Witch is a must-deal-with creature.
Yes.
And I love that, because I love like playing a creature that I feel like someone has to deal with. And I also think Witch of the Eye also falls in that. Like, I love a Witch of the Eye deck. All right, so I'm trying to think of like what my second favorite combination of houses probably are. And I'm going to go with... and this is, again, I think... if you have a deck that doesn't have shadows, so I was thinking about, like, what if I didn't have shadows, what I really like is a deck like Brobnar and Dis. And I like the way those two work together quite a bit, because Brobnar is this big powerhouse of creatures that can get in.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite cards in Brobnar is the Gengar Chieftain.
Oh, yes.
So
yes.
I have a deck that's got, like, 3 of them in it, and... it is just unbelievably strong.
And Gengar Chieftain is the one where you play it all 3 and low power creatures die?
No, Gengar Chieftain is the one where you're ready and fight with a neighboring creature.
Oh, right. Right.
And a lot of people don't think of Brobnar being controlling, but it actually is. So a deck with 3 Gengar Chieftain has 2 Grenade Snibs.
2 Grenade Snibs?
Grenade Snibs, that one that when it dies, your opponent loses 2 amber.
Yeah.
So, my opponent will be at 7 amber. They look at me. I don't have shadows. Wait, let's put them at 6, because maybe they're scared to like burn the stockpile or something. But either way, they've got enough amber to forge a key. It doesn't look like I can stop them. And the houses that I play are it's a little bit more rare for them to stop them, if that makes sense. Yeah. There's a lot of cards in Brobnar where it's like if you have seven amber, a couple.
Yeah.
If you have seven amber, your opponent loses four, I think, for burn the stockpile. And there's a creature that I really like, something Lemire Flamefist or something like that, where if they have seven, they lose two, which is really good.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're not at seven, let's say they're at six, I have two Grenade Snibs and a Gengar Chieftain and then that Goblin War Chief that returns everything to my hand. Yeah. So it's like, I play Grenade Snib, I play Gengar Chieftain, I ready my Grenade Snib, I send it in, he dies, they lose two amber, I return things back to my hand, I play the Gengar Chieftain again to either send another Grenade Snib in if I want to use another one or if I want to attack with one of my poison creatures or whatever it is. It's just, that is just so much fun to me. And then you pair that, in my opinion, with the disc creatures that are out there. And it just gives you some controlling aspect. So I love, like, Succubus. I love cards that prevent your... I'm trying to remember the name of it, but that fairy guy that only lets your opponent play two cards a turn. And then there's the... there's some capture abilities with, like, Charette.
Oh, yes.
And... there are some just really good disc creatures that add that little extra element of control. So when you pair those two together, I think it just becomes a really fun play experience to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's ways to like make your opponent play certain houses. There's ways to make them do things that are suboptimal to what based on like what you want to do next turn. And then you build up this really big Brobnar turn. And Goblin War Chief is huge, and that the guy that returns all your Brobnar creatures to your hands, which I had his name in my head and I forgot it. But anyway, you play him, and you can just do it all over again.
Yeah,
it's so much fun. All right, so what deck are you playing at the tournament?
I have a few ideas in mind, but I think I might just stick with the same deck, even though I lost a lot.
You only went 2-1 with that deck at the last one.
I thought I lost completely. Oh, no, I did actually win.
I don't think you've ever had a really bad tournament yet.
No, I don't think so.
I want to... I feel like I'm going into this one pretty confident, because I've been able to play my deck. I know what's in the deck. I know when the board state looks a certain way, what answers I have. I know what cards to hold on to now. I feel like my deck, I have a really good understanding of how to play it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm super excited about going into this tournament with that one. All right. So we also wanted to start this tips and tricks section. And this a lot comes from teaching new people how to play.
Yeah.
And this is something like for those of you that are experienced KeyForge players to keep in mind. Because new players make a lot of these same mistakes. I made these mistakes. You made these mistakes. The people that I'm trying to teach, I'm trying to get as many people as I can involved in KeyForge, you know, constantly misunderstand, like, how this stuff works. So I think this tips and tricks section is really just a reminder. Or if you're new to KeyForge, welcome, first off. And then hopefully these things help you, too. The first one is shields.
How they
armor,
actually
armor,
work.
Armor, shields, yeah, however you want to call it. And I'm going to let you take it, and maybe you can talk about like how they actually work, and then we'll talk about how most people play them.
Oh, I was going to do it the other way around. But
yeah, anyways. Either way, yeah.
Okay, so before me and Dad used to play shields, how they always stay the same all the time. So then the first time we ever played with shields... he had Sanctum, and he just dominated the whole entire board. Like, none of our creatures could even compare to that. But then we realize that shields regenerate after your turn's ended. So that's pretty interesting to us. So if your shield is 2 armor, and someone comes at it with 2 power creature, then the shield's depleted. It's no more shield or armor for that turn.
Yep.
And I thought that was pretty interesting.
It made a lot more sense.
It did,
because when we first played, and I've actually seen other players that I was playing against, actually at work, were having the same confusion. They're like, man, shields are so tough. And they're like, well, I guess I'm just going to play this anyway, even though it doesn't do anything. It'd be like two damage or 3-2-1. And,
yeah.
And I'm like, well, what it does do is it's knocked off the shield for the turn. And they were like, oh, okay. So that changes what I want to do now, because I thought the shield was just going to always apply.
Yeah.
And I think this comes from, like, some other games that potentially have sort of mechanics like that, where the shield is just always on. Like, it just blocks the damage straight up, and it actually can get hard to keep track of in a game, especially when you have a big creature board. So especially when you take, like, 3 damage, and so your shield's depleted here, but then over here it's not depleted, and that, there's just a lot of mechanics to keep track of. So sometimes it does make sense to actually use shield tokens, and then, like, pop them off and put them back on, just so you can kind of keep track of where they are with shields that turn.
Yep.
But this was game-changing when we found this out, because at the time we were like, man, Sanctum is just so strong.
Yeah.
Like, you can't get punched through those shields.
We and thought they're, like, the coolest thing ever because of those creatures, and we couldn't even, like, defeat them at all except if we had, like, Gateway to Disc to blow up the whole board.
Yeah, it just, and then you'd get, like, the creature, we'd get creatures that gave other creatures more armor, and, like, it's just ridiculous. The other tip that we wanted to talk about is...
the abilities on the card, the order of the cards.
Yeah, so there are a lot of cards where, like... I'm trying to think of an exact example of one. But there's a shadow card that gives you one roll amber when it on the card.
Mm-hmm.
And play ability that if your opponent has more... Or actually, this might be...
One or more amber. That's a Sanctum card.
It's a Logos card. So when you play this card, it has a play ability that if your opponent has more amber than you, you steal one and draw a card. But it also has the raw amber on it. So what order does that happen? And that has been a confusing point for a lot of... Like, it was confusing for us.
Oh, yeah.
I think I am talking about the same thing, but we'll see. Because the problem with the card that I just talked about is, like, say your opponent has 5 amber and you have 4 amber.
Okay.
You play this card... So, on its face value, it looks like your opponent has more amber than you, so you still want to bring it over and draw a card. But, because you get the raw amber before you put that into your amber pile, now you have 5 and they have 5, and it's an equal amount, so the playability actually doesn't trigger.
Oh, wait, I thought the playability was draw a card.
So, you're probably talking about a completely different card.
Yes, I am, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm talking about the card where you play it, you draw a card. If your opponent has more amber than you, and you've stolen an amber that turn.
Oh, okay.
So what has happened a lot of times is that raw amber will set you equal, and the question is, do you get that raw amber before or after the playability? And I think that is the biggest thing that we want to talk about here. So regardless of the card. You get your amber first.
You get whatever at the top of the card to the bottom of the card.
Yeah, so if you look at a card and it gives you amber, you get that before the playability.
Exactly.
So regardless of what the card is that Adam and I are talking about, if there's a card that looks at the amount of amber your opponent has, and yet it gives you amber and does a comparison between it, just remember that you have to get your amber first before that comparison happens.
Mm-hmm.
That is the card that I'm thinking of right now, the Logos card that I'm thinking of, is actually, Logos or Shadows? Man, I need to bring my deck with me next time. But anyway, I'm pretty sure it's a Logos card. It actually gives me, an opportunity to gain 2 amber that turn if I want to, and draw a card, because I gain 1 for playing it, I can possibly steal 1, and I can possibly draw a card. So, like, if you had a card that was just, like, gain an amber, steal an amber, draw a card, that's pretty darn strong.
That is, yes.
That's incredibly strong. So, it's a conditional statement that your opponent has to be ahead of you on amber. But, yeah, so if you have a card that has any sort of ability, any ability at all, just remember, top down. So, there's probably going to be cards that have multiple abilities.
Yeah.
And top down for those as well, too. If... I've never seen this yet, but if there are 2 play abilities on a card, the top one would happen first, and then the second one would happen.
Yeah.
It'd be really weird, and maybe they'll do it one day, but... So that was the two things that we kind of noticed that are a little bit confusing for people.
Yeah.
All right. So I think that's going to wrap us up for today. You got anything else in closing?
I think that's it.
All right. Well, I think the one thing I want to say is I'm actually going to do well at this next tournament. I'm not going to lose again.
You aren't?
Because, like I said, I really have got a good understanding of what cards are important in my deck, and I think I have a good shot of actually doing well. If my deck had a bait and switch, though,
man, that would just be good.
It'd be amazing.
Like a topping.
Wish I could find the exact same deck and just be able to pick out one card and replace it with a bait and switch. Like, I have three Ghostly Hands.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, that's in my Galvrestad deck. I have two Ghostly Hands in my Steel Kettle deck. But, so I have, like, a lot of raw Amber generation, which I'm super excited about. I feel like I'm going to 3-0 this tournament. But we'll see. How do you feel?
I don't know. I just need to keep practicing.
Yeah, I mean, last two sealed tournaments have been rough for me. The last Chainbound event we did, I did pretty good, 2-1.
You did, yeah.
Yeah. And I think I can do at least 2-1 this time around, if not 3-0. That's my goal. We'll see, though, because it depends on what decks people bring, because my deck is weak to certain decks, and I may run into those. That's it for me. You got anything else in closing?
That's it.
I hope you guys have a great week, and I can't believe we're already on episode 12. This is insane.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Age of Ascension is coming out super soon. Actually, they announced recently it's going to be May now, so it's not April, which is actually, I'm actually happier about, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And I think it might even be the end of May. All right, everyone.
Keep gaming.
Keep gaming. See you next time. Bye.